Hello there, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Football Manager Therapy. I am your host, Rich Owens, and joining me this week, we have the FM team. We have the United City FM Kev. We have Jebaru. Callum couldn't make it this week. Callum, we miss you, and we hope we'll see you very, very soon. But we're here to talk about some Football Manager. But firstly, and I think most importantly, Kev, how are you, pal?
Well, I'm here. And that'll do for now, you know, a couple of weeks off podcast is never fun in the last few weeks. So I have missed you. Fantastic work on the last couple of podcasts, though, boys, I must say. They have been superb. But yeah, the way that I describe it today, Rich, I'll tell all of the viewers and listeners, having a disability sucks. It just does. There are days where it's blooming awful, and most of the time it just passes without comment. If most of, you know, that's the way it works. Today, I'm doing fine. I'm fine. No, I am actually fine. I'm all right. But ultimately, I can't guarantee what tomorrow brings, and I don't quite trust it yet, if that makes sense. So it could be brilliant. It could just have settled back down again, and we'll all be all right. But tomorrow, you never quite know. But yeah, today, I'm all right. Happy to be here. Really happy to be back with you boys. And I hope you guys are well too.
Oh, good, mate. We are glad you are back. And first, thank you very much. It's very, very sweet of you to say well done for last week's podcast. Mm-hmm. An exciting look behind the FMT curtain for everybody. You know, I sit here and I get to sit in the host chair and say, hey, I'm the host of FMT. Last week especially kind of personifies just how important everybody else involved in this podcast is, because we had Nick Madden on from SI. One of my favorite ever episodes, not just to be a part of, just to listen back to. I don't listen back to a lot of the episodes apart from when I edit. I don't really go back and listen to the ones that I've been on because I've experienced it firsthand. I've listened to the Nick episode twice this week already, just because it was so interesting. There was so much to do, so much to learn from that episode. But the reason that episode was as good as it was is, first of all, Jeb did all of the work behind the scenes to get Nick on the podcast. Like, Nick appearing was all down to Jeb. I had nothing to do with it. That Jeb put in all the hard work. The same with Illusio as well. Jeb arranged all of that, and Jeb serves his flowers for it. It was incredible effort on both parts to get those guests on.
You keep saying that, but there's no flowers.
They're hypothetical flowers, Jeb. They're hypothetical flowers. For the audio listeners, Jeb's lying. He's got a massive bouquet of flowers behind him. But in terms of the Nick episode, the way it worked so well, because we're like, right, let's come up with some questions. And Kev just came up with like the most structured, beautifully laid out interview format for him. And we just asked all of Kev's questions. And that's why it worked so well. Kev did all the groundwork. So thank you, Kev. Callum was also there.
Callum's there to look pretty. Callum knows.
Callum was there. Fine. Callum's the eye candy.
Oh, to be fair, yeah, he did spend about half an hour on his hair last week.
He did. He did. Honestly, I've seen Callum do his hair in real life. It's incredible. He wakes up and it's all over the place. It's like, oh no, my hair. And he goes into the bathroom. Like, he just comes out 10 seconds later and it just looks perfect. And I don't know how he does it. There's incantations. Like, he sacrifices something.
I'm starting the room. It's a wig.
Okay. It's just a wig. Just a wig. Cheb, how are you, by the way?
I'm all right. I'm okay. Thanks for asking last week. Nick Madden's here. We're not going to ask you how you are. I see how it is. Yeah, I'm good. A busy week of work, but hopefully my last week of traveling for the year. So I get to sit here and chat to you guys. All good otherwise. There's a football game happening later. Let's see how that goes.
I don't recall.
Future listeners, yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I'm good. I enjoyed listening to the pod. I listened to it on my drive down to London, and then I also listened to it again. Actually, like you said, there's pointers you can pick up from various things. And it was something that we want to do on future episodes of people watching on YouTube. If you watch on YouTube, we'll try and chapter them a little bit more as well, so you can see. Find the bits that you want to find as well, part of the episode. So, yes, I've not had time to apply any of the advice yet, but soon, soon I'll be able to apply it.
Well, I think this is the thing, isn't it? There's a fine line between listening and learning And then picking up all the subtleties and nuances that Nick talks about, all the things that affect the course of a game that you as a manager do. But then there's actually also applying that to how you play the game. Those are two very, very different things. You know, it's all well and good to sit here and talk in depth about things like, I don't know, training schedules, and then actually practically applying it yourself. Nobody's got time to actually physically.
Nobody. Nobody ever. Nobody. No.
And nor should they. And nor should they. It's what I hire assistants for. Lads, I'm so glad you could both join us this week. It's going to be lovely. We've had a bit of a think behind the scenes about what we should really be talking about this week. We kind of realized that in the build-up to FM24, you know, we wildly speculated. Since the release, we have generally been very, very happy. We've done deep dives into specific aspects of the game. We've gone under the hood quite a lot recently, which has been great fun. Under the Steve hood, I really should have said. I feel like I've missed a trick by not saying that first time around. But you know what? It's out there now. We've talked about all these different things about FM24. But what we've not done yet is actually talk about how we are practically applying or not, in some cases, those things into what we're doing. Because, you know, we're getting towards the end of December now, and I don't really know what's going on in terms of the content that we're making and the saves that we're doing. So I thought this week would be a really good opportunity to have a bit of a catch up. We're all kind of, you know, deep into our content for FM24 now. I think it'd be a really nice idea to find out just how we're all getting on. Kev.
Yes.
You made your glorious and long-awaited return to Twitch this week, because we have all missed you. We have all missed those 2 hours of wonderful positivity of an afternoon. You've spent the last kind of couple of months rolling in the aisles,
as is
my understanding. How is the rolling going?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So as you say, I missed most of this last week just gone through ill health. I was there for a few days of the previous week, but the week before that I also missed as well. So it's kind of come and gone a little bit over the last 3 weeks, which has actually been quite tricky in a lot of ways. For everybody out there, I've always maintained that if anybody gains anything from my afternoon streams, then I can absolutely assure you that I gain tenfold more. I stream because of what it does for me, and the rest of it is an absolute bonus on top of it. So if that's the case, then you can imagine what missing those streams does to me also. Even though I wasn't feeling at my best, it was still mentally very frustrating not to be able to get there and do the thing that I love to do. So to be back a couple of days ago was really lovely. It was a lovely stream to do. What I would also say, though, is that you've suggested that we're all quite deep into our saves. I don't actually feel like I am yet. It feels like it's been a little bit of a slow start. Now, that's twofold. That's one, because of my health issues over the last few weeks, but also in the starting point of FM24, when I began my Rolling in the Isles, British Isles Journeyman series, I made the decision in the first season or so at my first club that I'll talk about in a second, that I was going to play on extended highlights rather than key highlights and try and learn a little bit more about tactical setup in FM24 and what was and wasn't working. So it just slowed everything down. I was playing like 4 games on a stream rather than like 7 games on a stream. So it just feels a little bit slow, but I have actually switched that round again now, gone back to key highlights, and we'll be beginning to move the save on a little bit quicker for the next little while. So I am just about to start my 3rd season in my British Isles Journeyman series. The basic premise, no coaching badges, Sunday league experience, roll around the British Isles, change the jobs as much as I want to or need to if they kick me out of clubs and all that kind of stuff, and eventually work my way to a point where my manager gets to 1 Champions League final, win or lose it, doesn't matter. That's the end of the series. So that's where we are. So I have to apply for all of my jobs. I can't put myself into any position, even at the beginning of the game. So we applied for a couple of jobs at the very beginning, when there were a couple of free positions available, but actually didn't feel quite right. They weren't quite the right sort of clubs in the right spots. So I waited into the first season to find a couple of managers that may be struggling a little bit and see what jobs came up. In October of the 1st season, the job at Hampton and Richmond became available in the Vanarama National League South. So that's about the sixth tier of English football. And I thought, well, that'll be an interesting start. It's quite a big league. There's lots of teams in there. It'll be a standard that's interesting. I'll apply for it and see what I can get. And we got given that job, which is great. So the reason that they sacked their manager in October is that they were due, I think they were due about a sort of 15th position spot, something like that. But they were down in 20th and just struggling a little bit. So they just hadn't got off to a very good start. So they sacked their manager because of it. I came in. I found it quite tricky, if I'm totally honest with you. Now, we did actually do pretty well in that first season, all things considered, considering I took them over in 20th. I got them up to 10th by the end of the first season, but it always felt a little bit inconsistent. I've got my first season results up in front of me. And in sort of the first October, there was draw, lost, win, lost, draw, win. There's a couple of losses and a couple of draws in November, December, four losses in a row, which bled over into January. So you can see it wasn't particularly consistent. February came through and I got four wins and a draw. So that was the point where it began to just turn slightly in my favor. And as I say, by the end of the season, I had actually got them up to 10th position, which actually they were all pretty happy with. And so was I. But then my first real big issue of my FM24 save occurred in that because of the level that we're playing at, a lot of the time you get to a summer and a few of your players leave because it's their end of contracts or they're on a non-contract or somebody comes in with an offer on a free or whatever. You know, there's just lots of movement at this level at times. So quite a lot of my team left me, which is fine. But I noticed quite early on in the summer transfer window that once they'd all gone, I was already overpaying on my wage budget and I hadn't even bought in any new players yet. And I had half a squad. So I had like literally 16 players, something like that. And I was already overspending. So I had to move a couple of people out, reshape the finances a little bit. But I actually really, really struggled in that middle summer transfer window between the two seasons of Hampton and Richmond. I got three or four players in, maybe got about a 19-man squad together. And I always work to 25 if I can. That's my basis. And I just couldn't do it. I couldn't find the quality. I couldn't find the free transfers. Couldn't find those loans where they wouldn't ask for a fee, a monthly fee, whatever, you know, couldn't find them. And it was a real struggle. So I went into season number two with Hampton and Richmond, just feeling a little bit like this is going to be a bit of a trudge. I was predicted a 19th place finish. So it had reduced a little bit from the prediction of the first season even. So that was a sign that it hadn't gone particularly well. And we kind of started like it as well. If I look at the first month of that second season, four losses in August, a win and a draw was kind of my opening gambit there. And it just felt really like walking through treacle a little bit. So, I mean, we picked up a few bits and pieces. We got through a couple of rounds of the FA Cup, which was actually pretty good. We got to the first qualifying round proper of the FA Cup. So, for the first round proper, should I say, and then lost it to Gateshead. But so we got on a bit of a run there. But yeah, it just never quite felt like I had a handle on the club or how I really wanted them to play or getting the best out of what I had somehow. So we went through season number two. It was inconsistent all the way through to, I would say, January. It felt really inconsistent and to the sort of the bad end of inconsistent, if that makes sense. And I was considering whether or not we would really be here for too long, just from my own sense of, is this what I really want to be doing? And so we started talking about that. Form did pick up. So in the end, having been predicted a 19th place finish and looking like I was going to finish around there, we actually boosted ourselves in the last couple of months of the season and finished 14th in the end, I think it was, in that second season with Hampton and Richmond. So I wasn't too unhappy with that, considering how it had felt to play through. But again, all the way through that second season, I didn't feel like I had a grip on how to play. They were doing all right. We changed formations a couple of times, changed style of plays. We were trying to do home and away type formations and tactical setups to try and find the difference, because my away form in that second season was atrocious, really bad. And I could not figure that one out, really, until very late on. So having got to the end of season two with them, ultimately, we had a decision to make. Do we feel like we can move this club forward? Is there a way in which we can improve them in that new summer transfer window? Or do we just kind of go, well, it got us our start. We got a coaching badge out of it, which was really good. It got us a little bit of an experience and gaining a little bit in reputation just for having a managerial role. Is the best idea now to leave the massive league that it is, because it's like 24 teams, 46 matches. And do I go and find one of those sort of 10, 12 team leagues in Wales or Northern Ireland or something like that in a couple of their lower divisions and see if I can just find a way to have a slightly smaller setup, a slightly smaller schedule, and maybe a little bit more consistency at the level I'm at. And ultimately, that's what I decided to do. I decided to resign my position at Hampton and Richmond after the second season and find a new job. And there were a couple of things that came up, you know, a couple of jobs at that sort of two-star level that you apply, knowing that you're not going to get it because it's two-star and you're not quite there yet. And the fans actively come out and laugh at you and you go, well, okay, but I tried. It would have been a nice job. And then there was a couple of positions that became available, but one that really interested me was a team in Wales called Colwyn Bay. And the reason that they interested me was, if you think that I've done two seasons at Hampton and Richmond, while I was doing that, in the first season, this top flight Welsh side, Colwyn Bay, had actually been relegated to the second tier. And in the second season, they were predicted a first place finish and they finished sixth. So they sacked their manager. And so at the beginning of season three, in that summer transfer window before season three, there is a club that is still predicted to finish first in the particular league that they're in with no manager and with a reasonably good group of players, because they're predicted to finish first and they failed to deliver that second season. So I applied for it and I got the job. And so I'm now just about to start season number three, but my first season at Colwyn Bay in the second tier of Welsh football. Since Friday stream, we're here on Sunday morning as we usually are recording the podcast. Since Friday stream, I have gone around the club a little bit, gone through a little bit of the transfer window, bought a couple of players in just to sort of fill a couple of gaps. And I'm sort of at the friendly stage, ready for Monday's stream. We're going to play a couple of the friendlies, look at tactical setups, exactly how we're playing them, and then get into season number one with Colwyn Bay in the second tier of Welsh football. So it's been a bit of a, it's been a really fun start. I've really enjoyed the save. I've really enjoyed FM24. Just being able to sit and watch the games, etc., has been incredibly good this time around. It's been a little bit bitty in terms of my consistency on stream over the last few weeks. So I don't feel like I'm totally caught up in it just at the moment. But I think this could be the start of something a little bit more interesting, because I do feel like if I could get them back into the top flight of Welsh football in the next season or two at the most, that will boost my reputation. It will give me some new challenges. It just feels like it could be a good move, and we'll see. But yeah, that's where I'm at so far. I can't say that I felt particularly connected to Hampton and Richmond. It was all right. It got me going. It was an interesting start. There's a couple of good players in there, but not too many really that really shone for me. And now we move on and see what happens. And that's basically where I am, really.
So my first question is, have you just robbed my story? Because it sounds very similar to what I'm going to tell. Like, I think they're not going to give you any money. Oh, you can't actually sign anyone. Yeah, yeah.
That's very, the challenge, isn't it? Absolutely. It really is. Now, I mentioned this to Callum, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and his response, of course, he's in and around Slough a lot of the time in the last couple of iterations of FM, who were in and around the same league that I was at with Hampton and Richmond. And he basically suggested only certain people are actually made for this sort of level, Kev. You know, you just got... And he might have a point, because I genuinely sat there for two seasons going, I don't know how to play this team. It wasn't like I was trying to do anything complicated. I wasn't putting every complicated named player position in the team just for the sake of it or anything. I was playing 4-4-2s or 4-3-3s, trying to get the ball up the pitch as quick as I could, trying to use, you know, the skill set that my teams have. But it just didn't quite work. It just wasn't nothing flowed about anything really, and it was so inconsistent all the way through. And then, yeah,
the issue where you can't bring people in to change it,
that's the thing.
You can't move people on and you can't change it. You're just like, these are the players I'm stuck with.
Mm-hmm. I because last FM I was leading the way in a lot of European nation in European leagues last season, so I was always at the top flight, even though it was some challenges along the way. But that middle summer between the Hampton and Richmond seasons genuinely was so hard. I did a bit of it off screen just because I needed to get my head around some of it. And I spent like 4 hours and barely found two players that I could bring into my squad that we've got, that had anything about them, that were on the right financial package, etc., and all that stuff. And I just thought, I don't know how I'm going to change that. I really, really don't. And it was incredibly difficult. Now, I think given time, if I decided that I was going to do a one team save and it was Hampton and Richmond, I'd have figured them out, because you have to. You know, we'd have found a way, whatever. But because I kind of didn't have to necessarily, it was an easy get out to just say, well, it gave me a start and that's what we've gained from it, and we'll move on. But yeah, it was really, really tricky. But within the context that the streams have been fantastic and the game plays really well, I just haven't quite got the results that I was looking for necessarily. But yeah, that's where I'm at. Happy to be where I'm now at. I think Colwyn Bay will be an interesting one. It's just occasionally you need that little bit of good fortune, don't you, to find something that's a little bit in your favour. And I think a dropped down team that's predicted to finish first that haven't quite managed it yet could be in my favour slightly, and we'll see what happens.
I saw a tweet this week from one of the kind of, you know, general football manager content sharing accounts. I can't quite remember which one it was, but there was a statistic they put up there, and they said they're looking at the they were going through the Football Manager 24 Steam achievements list, and loads of games, whether it's Steam achievements, Xbox Live achievements, PlayStation trophies, there are some games that people play and you are pretty much guaranteed to get specific achievements or trophies when you play them. Like if you remember the classic, the Simpsons game on the Xbox, you got a trophy for literally pressing start on the first screen. Like, it just happened by default. Like, press start, 5 gamer score, congratulations. There were videos of people's, like, loads of videos, people like, oh, here's a YouTube video of my dog getting an achievement on Xbox Live. You know, it's like pressing start with its paw on a controller. But somebody pointed out they were going through the Steam achievements on Football Manager 24, and there are some that you just automatically assume that people are going to get just by playing the game for 10-15 minutes. And they said it was something like only 86% of players that have played FM24 have unlocked the sign a player achievement on Steam. Like, how are there 14% of people who are playing this game that haven't even managed to sign a player? Non-league English football is the answer to that question, as it turns out.
Absolutely.
That's why. That is exactly why you can't do it. It's a hard thing. And I think, Kev, I think there's going to be a lot of people who are listening to this who are going to be able to resonate with a lot of what you were just saying.
Sure.
Because sometimes taking over a club halfway through a season, especially if you're starting a journeyman, whatever you're doing in terms of your save, sometimes it just doesn't click. Sometimes it just doesn't feel like home.
Yep.
And it's a really, really hard thing to try and force investment into a club or a set of players. And if you're trying to do it as a one club save, as you say, it's a very, very different set of processes. But the way you've got Rolling in the Isles set up, if you're not feeling it, then there's no shame. There's no shame in needing to move on. It's the sensible thing to do, to move on the save. And I think, again, I love a fallen giant. Or Colwyn Bay, Giants of Welsh football. Who's to say? Who's to say? Colwyn Bay fans, please feel free to correct me. Am I right or am I wrong? Let me know, please. But a relegated, you know, top division side in a lower league has the potential to be loads and loads of fun.
Yeah.
I did it tail end of Scandinavia last year. I was like, right, I've done Scandi Triple Crown. West Ham in the championship. Let's give that a run. And again, it's not always the easiest thing to do. Because I think there's, you know, the bigger teams and lower divisions, you're always going to be seen as the scalp, aren't you? There are always going to be teams that go out and play against them like it's a cup final. Like, right, let's take 3 points off this relegated top flight club when, you know, we've still got players on amateur contracts or, you know, that's always going to be the challenge. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to hearing how you do in Wales.
Yeah, no, absolutely. My thought is that I will now steer clear of English football for quite a while. You know, Northern Ireland, Ireland, Wales, Scotland will be my destination for the little while. And I'd attempt at some point to go back in English football, maybe somewhere in the Championship or something to push myself into the Premier League eventually. So I feel like it's an interesting starting point, but it's I feel just a little bit more at ease with the thought that I've got like a 10-12 team league in Welsh football. I think that the pressures on the players will be slightly less in terms of the amount of games they have to play, all that kind of good stuff, so you can rest them a little bit better and protect them a little bit. But yeah, hopefully there'll be a good setup in the first season for Colwyn Bay, and maybe we can get an early promotion. Then of course you have that tricky thing of they got relegated from the top league for a reason, so you know, are they going to be suitable to stay up? And that'll be the next challenge, but it'll be an interesting challenge, and there'll be some reputation boosts in there, I think, for the journey that I'm taking. So yeah, ultimately happy with how it's all going, but hopefully, you know, 2 months from now, it will look in a very, very different spot than it currently feels like it is.
Yeah, come back in 2 months when Kev's just been offered the Watford job and goes, ah, the hell with it, let's give it a go.
Everybody gets offered that job. I mean, we're all in line IRL for it, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like national service. If you are a fan of football, you get to spend 2 or 3 months in charge of Watford. You get a Spanish passport as well, because most of them are, yeah, it's just how it works. It's just how it works. Jeb, I mean, you've just said that you might have a similar story to tell with Morecambe.
Similar-ish. I think there's a couple of key things that Kev was missing. One has been referred to on the previous podcast with FM Creators and also across Twitch. So Morecambe, it's an interesting setup. They had a lot of players in on loan. Some of them were absolutely useless. Some of them were unbelievably good. So there's a player that they've got currently. He's actually doing really well in the Championship. There's two of them. They've got Tom Bloxham, who's on loan from Shrewsbury, who's 6'5" and a target forward. And then they've got Michael Mellon, or Mickey Mellon. He is the son of Mickey Mellon as well. So he's named himself after. Who'd have thought he'd have done that? He's on loan from Burnley, and he's an advanced forward. So you've got your big man, little man up front straight away. They scored lots of goals to start off with. I had a really good start to it. I was second, I didn't really bring in many players. I wasn't really anyone to bring in. I think the one thing that we mentioned, I needed a director of football. I figured, let's get some people in. And Marco van Basten applied for the job. He wanted to come to sunny Morecambe. So Marco van Basten is my director of football. Just, you know,
he could still play for me.
Exactly. That's what he probably could still play for Morecambe, just still do a job. I mean, Mickey Mellon's just like, oh, this is great. I could learn off him as well. And then we also brought in, just to balance it out, we brought in Kieran Dyer as a coach, who's actually balanced as a personality, which surprised me. But okay. There we are. So that's where we were with that. We didn't really bring in many players because we didn't have any money to bring them in. We brought in a couple of loans. The one issue I identified straight away as soon as we started the save was, I need a goalkeeper. We need a goalkeeper that can do something. Couldn't find one? Nope. Couldn't find a single one. We brought in Luca Gunter, who's like an under-18s goalkeeper at Tottenham. He was all right. We brought in Jordan Much. I think he used to play for Cardiff. To come into central midfield, he can hit a free kick. I think he finished the season with the most free kick goals. And yeah, so that's where we were. And we, like I said, we started off positively. And we had a few wins. We beat Wrexham in the EFL Cup. We got Tottenham in the second round. They destroyed us, which wasn't surprising. But then, yeah, we just kind of just went on streaks. Like, we had a 5-game winning streak. And like I said, we went up to second in the league. Then we came back on another stream and we did 5 draws in a row. I was like, okay, fair enough. Then we had another 5-game winning streak. And then, trying to think, I think it was we played, we got to the second round of the Pizza Cup, the Papa John's. And this is going towards the back end of December. And we played Salford, and Salford was doing quite well. They knocked us out 2-0. And then we played Tranmere in the, oh no, we played Tranmere in the FA Cup second round, got through to the third round. That was good. And then we played Salford in the Pizza Cup, and they beat us 2-0. And then the list begins. Stockport, Doncaster, Walsall, MK Dons, Bradford, Notts County, Harrogate, Man United. All right, Man United, that's kind of expected.
You lost to Man United.
I know, exactly. At Old Trafford. Mansfield, MK Dons, Colchester, Crawley, Sutton, Tranmere. No, they're not all stops. They're all the teams I lost to in a 16-game losing streak.
How did you keep your job?
I don't know. I got called into the boardroom once, and it was to tell me, oh, can you drop this right back? Which is not very good. I'm not even playing him. Nice one. And then they congratulated me. It's well done. You get to keep your job because you didn't play that right back. I wasn't playing him anyway. It's fine. Yeah. So in January, we picked up notorious, I'm just going to have to double check what his nationality actually is now. Sierra Leonean Stephen Colker.
Ooh, okay.
I'm sure he had a cap for England like once. Well, I don't know if he was double cap or anything that way. But yeah, maybe, former maybe QPR, Liverpool.
Definitely, Stephen Colker's in the one cap, one goal squad, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure he is, yeah. But yeah, he's had 14 caps for Sierra Leone as well, so. But yeah, I picked him up on a free. He's been doing nothing for 2 years. His physicals kind of show that. But I picked him up, put him in as club captain, just to somebody's... And he didn't have the best of seasons anyway when he came in. So that was... he finished on an average of 6.76. And we'd, like I said, while I was going through that, I think it was like a 6.5-hour stream. And we just couldn't pick up a win anywhere. And I couldn't do anything about it. And that was the frustrating thing. I could change what I could do with the squad that I had. I couldn't bring anyone in because we couldn't afford anyone. Mm. I couldn't get rid of anyone. I couldn't. The main issue was the goalkeeper, and I couldn't find a goalkeeper to replace the rubbish that I had goal. And this was the thing. I think the goalkeeper, ironically, was called. I think it might be Stephen Moore. I can't remember what his name is. I need to look it up because. But of course, all the Declan Moore songs got played during every single time he came around. But yeah, I just couldn't change it. I changed the formation. I tried to change the system. There was one game where I was 2-1 up in the 86th minute and I lost 3-2. But I think I even made a TikTok out of it how bad it was because it was just This isn't the game ending highlight. This is a game ending highlight, isn't it? He's going to blow the whistle. He's going to blow the whistle. Cross tick goal. No. So we managed to get a win, and then we were just inconsistent towards the end of the season. We picked up Lucas. Here we go. Let's murder a Polish surname. Dziukiewicz. For some reason, he'd been released by Birmingham. He came in. First game, scored 2 goals. We beat Wimbledon 2-1. The slump was over. But then we were just inconsistent towards the end of the season. I think the only thing that was quite a little bright spot was we beat Wrexham 4 times that season, which was quite nice. It was quite nice to beat Hollywood. Didn't have a loss against them. But then the main issue with Morecambe is every single player, apart from Adam Major, who is by far the star player who's going to go on somewhere else, were on 1-year contracts, or they were loan deals. So I was set to lose my entire squad at the end of the season. Some of them. Great, get rid of all those goalkeepers. But some of them was a bit frustrating. So we lost a lot of our central defenders, a couple of fullbacks and stuff. So it's a rebuild in the summer. And we could only bring in 3 transfers. We got basically, I got called into the boardroom at the end of the season because we didn't make a top half. And they went, right, what are you going to do? And I'll do better next season. Like, okay, that's fine. And then I think it might be, I don't know if it's a bug or if it's something Football Manager needs to look into, but then that was 3 games left in the season. Then we played the next game, we drew it. Called into the boardroom again. What are you going to do? Like, I've already told you. I'm going to sort it out next season. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Last game of the season, we win. Finish the season off and they go, oh, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to address this? We could do better next season. Okay, yeah, that's fine. But what we'll do to help you is we're going to give you a reduced wage budget. Good luck. Thanks. Great. This was after a board take. This after a board takeover. So we have the list. I think we ticked off like 14 out of the list. Jordan Mutch got goal of the month and goal of the season. So that was two things that was ticked off. So we had a board takeover. So that was ticked off. Except the board takeover came in. They didn't provide any money. But the chairman, I'm sure he should have had some money because his name was Ronnie, or if you probably look at his birth certificate, Ronald, and his surname was McDonald. He should have loads of money, or he's just a massive clown, which I think he was, because during the summer, we had another board takeover. The fans had a takeover instead, and they didn't bring any money in with them either. I was like, great, cool, this is really good. So we went into the summer. We lost. I did have it up actually earlier. Let me pull that up again. There we are. We lost. We lost 10 players on a free transfer. We brought in a load of trialists, including Scott Carson, who came in on trial, did really well on trial. Like, he'll be a 4-star keeper in the league. And then when we went to sign him, he just decided he wanted to retire instead. I was just like, thanks, Scott. Thanks for wasting my time. We brought in so many trialists. It was ridiculous. Notable names, Kevin Stewart, Jed Steer, Matty Longstaff came in. I think he's still out in the Shane Long. There was somebody else that we had there. Jordan Ibe as well. He's still terrible. Like, I still laugh that Liverpool sold him for 15 million to Bournemouth. Somebody, the only way I can describe Jordan Ibe is he's like Raheem Sterling, except when he gets into the final third, his decision making is one. And that was it. That was the only thing. He just didn't have intelligence when he got further forward. So we kind of plundered through. And the thing was, because we lost all those players, we had quite a big gap in our wage budget. So we could sign all these free transfers in. We brought so many like youth players in. There's a couple of like notable names, but nothing major. Like Mahoney's probably the biggest name that we brought in. And we kept hold of Major. He wants to leave. He's agreed he'll leave up when we get 1.6 million in, which will tick off loads of boxes on my little list. But I'm not sure if you're familiar with, well, when the FM community save that was done, and we're managing Barrow. And Barrow signed a player on loan, and I wore a duck mask for half of the stream. It was part of the thing, but it kind of fitted into a player called Marcus Dackers, aka Marcus Quackers. we brought him in for 375k, 125k up front, and then 250k on the Never Never or in the future seasons and stuff. And he's 21, he's at Salford, he's 6'7" with a jumping reach of 18. And I was like, nice. Yes, you'll do for me every single way. You're going in as target forward. You can't actually head the ball that well, so we're training him. That's fine, we'll fix that. But yeah, we brought him in. And then we also brought in a striker called Charlie McNeil, who we brought him in on a free transfer. He wasn't Man United for a couple of seasons. Then he went to Newport County and Stevenage, and then he's been released. So we brought him in. And I thought, he's all right. And then the predictions came out for League Two. He was predicted to be top goal scorer. I was like, okay, maybe he's better than all right. We'll see how he gets on. So we started the second season okay. Like we got through to the second round of the EFL Cup. I'm not through on penalties. I'm not sure where we'll go. I'm worried about it a little bit, but we've got a fair bit of August to get through. We might be able to bring in a few more players. We just don't have budget. That's the thing. We just seem to be struggling again and again with budget. We have got a parent club in Arsenal, but none of their players want to come to me. Somebody did say this to me on stream. I was like, but it's Arsenal. I was like, yeah, but if you went for the team in the Championship, they will actually give you players, whereas Arsenal players will go, I'm not going to Morecambe. Why would you want to go there? Because it's a lovely seaside resort. It is, if you look outwards, not inwards. Right. Right.
It's got a nice sea.
Yeah, it's got the nice sea, except when it's windy and horrible and you don't want to look at it. Right. But, yeah. So, it's a struggle, and it's I want to get back to streaming it, and I will this week, and I'm excited by it. Like I think there's something there that I've built. I've bought that many youth players in. It's now I'm going to have to rely on the kids and Stephen Colker, who's got now pace at 32 of 7. I've just realised, so might have to do something about that. And like I said, the future is Quackers and McNeil, I guess, which sounds like a fantastic buddy cop movie. So there we are.
It's definitely the thing I could not achieve at Hampton was to get that big guy in. I was playing basically one up front because it's all I had in the end. But immediately, my first thing for Colwyn Bay was big guys up front. I've got a couple of them that I've bought in to be able to try and work that a bit. But yeah, so that partnership up front might do you the world of good. I mean, Charlie McNeil came through the United system. And looks a reasonable prospect ultimately. So I reckon he'll bag you a bucket load, to be honest. I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, I hope so. Like I said, there's a couple of decent players still there, like JJ McKinn and Andrew Mayer are the two standouts. Like, there are actually Morecambe players. Like I said, it's a shame that Mayer wants to leave, but he's agreed that he won't leave until they get that bid in, which is perfect. Just stay that way. Looking at like the wages that I've got at the minute, I've got a guy playing in central defence who's getting £160 a week. and then Charlie McNeil's getting £2,500 a week. And it's varying between the two. It's vastly varying. Like, the finances are a little bit of an issue. We've still got £3,000 to play with, but it's just difficult, that balance, and like get excited by board takeovers, but it's just the same people. It's just a different clown mask. So one time it's Ronald McDonald, this time it's somebody else, but we'll see how we go. Like, there's no youth prospects, and I think that becomes a worry. And it's just like that building. How do you build the team? Where does somebody get funneled to? So we'll see. We'll see where we get to. I want this to be a one club dynasty, but I might get sacked before it happens. I mean, I've been called in the boardroom a few times now. I think the supporters are behind me again, which is nice. They were fully on an F beforehand, and yeah, we'll see.
You know, it sounds like you've got a bit of work to do, but you've already, you know, you're laying the foundations at the moment. If you can get Quackers scoring headers, you're going to be fine. I mean, what's his problem at the moment is that every time somebody kicks the ball at his head, he ducks. Good night, everybody. See you later.
If you would like to be the new host of Football Manager Therapy, please apply.
It's dead easy. Yeah, we'll send you the email address. Just send your three best duck jokes, and we'll base it off that. But again, there's something. I am a big fan of trying to bring in elder statesmen into slightly lower reputation clubs. Mm-hmm. Like, if you'd have got Scott Carson, like Scott, the fact that he, you know, he's sat on City's bench for however many years he's done it, he's barely played professional football, and you think he'd be like itching to, you know, be a first choice goalkeeper at a club again. And he spent a month in Morecambe and went, no, I'm done. It's just like the Undertaker just lays his boots in the middle of the training ground and his little hat, and just off he walks, and that's it, never to be seen from again. That's wonderful, though. The wage structure is really weird, especially when, like, I've seen it and I've experienced it myself, when you look at the contracts and you've got lads on, you know, £150 a week who are just happy to be there, and then you're paying somebody, you know, 10 times that at the top of the end of the spectrum. It's really hard to balance that squad harmony. Because I guess you've got to try and keep everybody on board. But, you know, if you're somebody like Stephen Colk, you'd be like, mate, I've scored a goal for England. So what have you ever done? These are the questions. I'm gonna have to mix it up a little bit now, I'm afraid, lads. And I'm really, really sorry.
Ooh, okay,
because I know it's nearly Christmas.
Mm.
And there is plenty of times for the wheels to fall off my save between now and the end of the year. But at the moment, I'm doing quite well, which is not particularly on brand for me, but I'm doing all right at the moment. So my save, what's the story for McGlory? I am traveling around the world trying to fix the reputations of formerly successful football clubs in a variety of different ways. It could be, you know, getting them back into the top flight of their national football team system, or winning a trophy, or winning a European trophy. Plenty of different kind of metrics I can measure myself against.
Yep.
I started the save at Kashima Antlers in the J League because I was desperate to sign for Kashima Antlers because, well, just desperate to manage the J League because it's first time it's been officially in the game, and I really, really wanted to have a go out there.
And what was their former glory?
So Kashima Antlers are on paper the most successful team in J League history. Mm-hmm. But they have not won a league title since 2016. So they've been going through a bit of a dry spell, haven't been playing particularly well. Other clubs have kind of established themselves as successful kind of in that interim. So I was like, you know what, go back there, win them their first league title in however many seasons, and then I can move on to a new challenge.
Nice.
Japan's an interesting one because their season runs from essentially from January to December. It's pretty much a 12-month season. So you start kind of January, and then I think the first league games roll around in, where are we? I think it's around late January, early February, the season actually begins. So it's, you have a big head start on a lot of other clubs in the game. Obviously, because of the way that the database works, free agents are still free agents. Because she had a bit of a budget, you know, there was I think there was around £7 million wage budget, sorry, £7 million transfer budget, but the wage budget was maxed out. So realistically speaking, after you've balanced everything, it's about a £3 million transfer budget and then some wage. I was looking around the squad and I was like, there's a solid enough backbone here, but my main concern is A, who's going to score the goals, and B, who's going to keep them out the net.
Yep.
The Japanese, the J League rules are you can sign, you can have a infinite amount of non-Japanese players in your squad. There's no limit how many you can sign and register, but you can only have a maximum of 5 non-Japanese nationals in your matchday squad. So you've got to balance that aspect of it as well. Kashima's 5 non-Japanese players were already there. So I thought, if I'm going to improve on these, you instantly need to get rid of those straight away. I had a 39-year-old South Korean goalkeeper who wasn't particularly great, who was very, very happy to kind of see the back off. I had a couple of Brazilian midfielders, one of whom was already had a pre-agreed contract to leave at the end of the season anyway. So clearly the first thing I did, I went to the free agent market and I was like, there's going to be somebody in here. There's going to be a game changer. And I want to take this save really, really seriously. I don't want to seem like I'm messing about. So the first player I signed was Fabrizio Quagliarella, 39 years old. 39 and I think 362 days old, because I signed him and by the time the press conference had rolled around to announce him, he had turned 40. So in he came straight away. And attribute-wise, technically phenomenal. Mentally incredible. There were numbers in his physical attributes, but I think the vast majority of, I think cumulatively, I think they added up to about 15. They were really good natural fitness, but everything else was woeful. But I was like, the way I was, what I wanted him to do is I'm going to use him as a deep lying forward. So he's not going to be chasing anything. They'll play the ball into him and he can, his passing and his vision were wonderful. His long shots are really good. His finishing's really good. Like, he's got the potential to beat a man and then just shoot and it's probably going to go in, or he can pass, he can move the ball around. That was all going to be fine. So he came in first. I just went really deep into the free transfer market. We needed a left back desperately, so I signed 2. Nico Schultz on a free. He just left Borussia Dortmund. Again, fairly well balanced. Mentally a bit weak, but my logic was, in the J League, because his physicals and his technicals are all quite good, that will compensate for the fact that his mentals aren't brilliant. So if he gets caught out of position, he's fast enough and he's fit enough to track back and he's good enough tackling that he's going to get in front of his man and try and the ball back. There was method to the madness with every single signing that I made.
As long as you're admitting that it was definitely madness, though, that's fine.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I think I was due about 3 welfare checks about 2 hours into the first stream. I bought in Gbamin, the central midfielder who's just been released by Everton in real life. I think he signed for about 17, 18 million pounds in real life, played about four games for the club just due to injuries and just loans, and it just didn't work out for him there. But on FM, he looks really, really good. A very, very high quality J-League standard player. So in he came, I was very aware at this point that all the signings that I were making were non-Japanese nationals. So then I spent a bit of money just to reinforce the defence. I bought in a Japanese centre-back. I sold my South Korean goalkeeper, so I bought in a Japanese goalkeeper from another J-League club. He looked good. He wasn't going to be the best keeper in the league, but he looked solid enough. And then we started the season. You know, I was confident with what I'd built in the pre-season. Part of the challenge for me for the save is every club I go to, I want to use a different tactical setup. Mm-hmm. When I did the Scandinavian challenge last year, I created a really, really nice 4-2-3-1, and I used it at every club I went to because I was like, the system works. I know this system works, and I can fit the players and adapt those players to this system, and that's how I'll get success. With this one, I don't want to rely on coming up with something tactically and having to rely on it for the majority of the save. I want to do different things at different clubs. So again, J-League, very exciting new country, exciting new league. Let's bring out a good old-fashioned Brexit 4-4-2. That's what the J-League fans want to see.
Obviously.
So it's two fast wingers, a creative centre midfielder and a ball-winning midfielder. Two no-nonsense centre-backs and a bit of additional support from the wing-backs, but I don't want them getting too high up the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of my centre-backs, in terms of my central midfielders, my best player was one that came in through a Sort It Out SI patch, because I went live with the save on release day, and as it turned out, on release day of FM24, the J-League wasn't fully licensed.
Mm.
It was, but some of the clubs just hadn't agreed to certain player likenesses. There were a few bits and pieces they were still sorting out. So it was about 85% of the way there. Sort It Out SI, within a couple of hours, had put out a database fix. So to bring in all the players that exist and are playing in Japan at the moment, but weren't included in the game. Players like Wanmata, for example. Wanmata's out in the J-League at the moment.
Yeah.
Bafétimbi Gomi, the former Swansea striker, he is out there at the moment. Some quite high-profile players. So I did have to start the save again, put the patch in, and then carry on. But I did all the players assigned I did after I'd restarted, so it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really, really, really good Japanese central midfielder in my team that wasn't there when I first loaded the save. I was like, oh, he will do an absolute job for me. He's going to be great. You know, attribute-wise, wonderful. Like, looks like a really, really solid central midfielder. And because he's a Japanese national, that means there's one really, really good quality Japanese player who's going to be guaranteed starting, a place in the start 11. When he's fit every week, he's in. He's going to be fine. As it turns out, there was a slight problem with the patch from Sort It Out SI, meaning that every single player that they had created to put into the database, for some reason, including real-life players like Bafétimbi Gomi, who I think is about 6'2", 6'3", in real life, all of them were 4'11", which isn't ideal. All of them, very, very, very small. And for some reason, my central midfielder as well, I think they'd mishit a keystroke on him because he was supposed to be, I think, on $7,000 a week. But as it turned out, he was on $77,000 a week. So that again...
Wow.
Not great. But fortunately, that got incorporated into the club's existing wage structure, so it didn't bankrupt me. Because if it had, I was in trouble. So it was great. You play a club, and you know, like when you played against Gomi, like he's just there. But because the match engine looks so nice, he is visibly 4'11", but he's still got really, really high jumping. He's still got really, really good heading, but it's just, he's a very, very small man. But we started well in the league. Mm-hmm. We started really well. It was going pretty comprehensively well. As it turns out, I did a bit of research into this. There are a lot of words in Japanese that don't have literal English translations. Mm-hmm. There's loads of them out there in the world. Language is wonderful. One of my favorite, there's a Japanese word. It's called sundoku, which is basically a word that describes the act of purchasing loads and loads of new books without reading your old books and just letting them all stack up next to you. Wonderful word. I absolutely love it, but there's no literal English translation. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, there's no Japanese translation for the word Pictionary. because Kashima Antlers just refused to draw at any point. It was all or nothing. We either won or there was at no point in the, like in the opening kind of 15 games of the season did I ever feel like we were going to come away with a point from a game. It's like, no, it's 3 points or it's nothing, because it was just wins, losses, wins, losses. We didn't really hit form. I think the players were just learning the tactic, learning the new system, trying to bed themselves in. But we were doing okay. We were kind of, you know, we were consistently, I don't think we dropped below around seventh in the opening couple of months of the season. It was all going all right. And then I hit a bit of a roadblock, because the starting goalkeeper that I bought in, the Japanese keeper I bought in, picked up an injury. He was out for 2 months. And all of my backup goalkeepers weren't particularly good. And if you remember back at the start of FM24, goalkeeper injuries were kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm in some trouble here, because all of my reserve keepers, my youth keepers are barely competent. I don't think any of them had an attribute above 10 or maybe 11 in any category. I was like, this could be problematic for me. I'm going to drop loads of points. And then chat pointed out in my scout report that my scouts were all recommending David De Gea, who is, of course, still unattached. They're like, David De Gea? The scouts are recommending David De Gea. Well, of course they're recommending David De Gea. It's David De Gea. He's dead good at goalkeeping, but there's absolutely no chance he's going to come and sign for me. They're like, oh, I'll just have a chat with his agent. And I had a chat with his agent, and it was like, yeah, he'd probably want about 40 grand a week. And I was like, oh, that's actually not terrible. But again, very much like Jeb at Morecambe, I've got first team players here who are on a grand and a half a week. So I think if I try and bring in somebody for 40 grand, it's definitely not going to work. And they're like, oh, go on, offer him a contract. You never know. I did my standard click on, those wage demands are astronomically high. We're never going to be able to do that. Even though in theory, I had about 45 grand a week left in my wage budget. Try and talk him down. And instantly, David De Gea's agent apologized. Like, oh, I'm sorry. He'd probably accept closest for around 35. Sorry, what were we thinking? Well, the stars are kind of aligning. And then we go in and we start having a chat with David De Gea. And he said, well, I want to be a star player. I'm like, well, of course you do, because you're really, really good. So we agree, star player, wants to learn Japanese. Of course he does. Like, you know, wants to try and win a trophy. Of course he does. I'll agree to all of this, because I'm going to click on the next screen and his wage demands are going to be 75 grand a week. And I'm just going to walk away from it and go, well, we tried. So I click on it. And he wants 35 grand. So he was on 10 times that, you know,
yeah.
That's interesting. Maybe he just really likes playing football. I talked him down to 30. I promised him the earth in terms of future fees, clean sheet bonuses, winning competitions. I think he was going to be an emperor by the end of his contract if he stayed for long enough. 30 grand a week. And he said, yeah, all right, no worries. I'll come and do a job for you. And then in came David De Gea. And instantly everything just started working. Because I think everyone went, oh my God, you've got David De Gea. He's really, we can't score past him. That's not fair. You can't do that. And I did an anti-Jeb, because I didn't lose for about 15 games in a row. And I won 14 of them.
I prefer Uncle Jeb, sorry.
Sorry. We Uncle Jeb.
Oh dear.
We Uncle Jeb'd. He's really good at Pictionary at Christmas as well. It was great. We went on an absolute tear. Iniesta's old club, Vessel Kobe, they were absolutely running away with the league at this point. I think they won their opening seven or eight fixtures in a row. There was already a big old gap between them and second. But when we started winning games, they started losing games, and we went on this absolute tear. At one point, we had, I think we had like a 9-10 point lead on second, absolutely flying, looked untouchable. And then often, as these things do, injuries happened. We lost a bunch of key first teamers. And then suddenly we went from absolutely flying in the league to suddenly we couldn't win for love nor money. Like, it just wasn't working at all. After our huge winning streak, we lost lost two in a row and then drew another, a very uncharacteristic draw for us. But picking up 1 point in nine, suddenly Vitesco, they realised they were actually quite good at football again, and they started playing football again, and they just closed the gap. Over the space of three games, my lead had just disappeared, and I was concerned. Now, fortunately, in Japan, they do have a little mid-season break, but then they just chuck friendlies in there, so... You know, I played the reserves in some friendlies, tried to build a little bit of morale back up, which kind of worked. It kind of worked. But then from so that was July. And then from July until the end of the season in early December, Vitesse Kobe were just matching us result for result. We started drawing games. Suddenly they figured out Pictionary is loads of fun. We started drawing, started dropping points all over the shop, and those games were frustrating because I think I saw some of the most frustrating goals conceded I've seen in FM in a very, very, very long time. Just players out of position, awful goalkeeping errors. I just couldn't get games over the line. Our strikers started struggling a little while because all the way through this, Quagliarella is pulling the strings. Quagliarella is having a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful season. I bought in some kind of Japanese reinforcements in the mid-season break because some became available from other European clubs. A guy called Appelkamp, who sounds very, very German. He's got dual German and Japanese nationality. So kind of he came in from the Bundesliga and just started assisting like an absolute madman. He was wonderful. And it kind of, we started to hit form again. So through August and September, we started winning again. We only lost one game, which was in the cup, so we weren't really fussed. But then Vitesse Kobe are keeping up with us. And it kind of got to the run-in of the season, and I'm thinking, the purpose of my time in Japan was to try and win a league title. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to create, you know, I'm not doing one club save. All I have to do, win the league, get out of Dodge. I'm done. The problem I had is that the board expectations, the board wanted me to win the league in my first season. The media prediction for us, even after my signings, was about fifth. So it's like, it's expectations versus reality are going to be tricky here. So I'm thinking, on the one hand, I got to a one cup quarter final, got knocked out. I'm thinking, you know what? We've still got the league. We're still in the other Japanese cup competition, which we got through. We got through to the semi-finals. And form in the league is quite good. But I'm thinking to myself, if the wheels fall off again, if we don't win the league and I don't win a cup competition, I'm probably on the chopping block because I haven't won anything and the board wants success. And I've spent a bit of money. Granted, I've brought some back into the club as well. I think in my first, I think it worked out to about £9 million I spent, but I bought about £7.5-8 back into the club. So, which I didn't feel terrible about. I was in a really difficult situation. So I'm thinking, on the one hand, if I don't win a cup competition and I don't win the league, I'm going to get fired. So I kind of want to take the cup seriously. But on the other hand, if I put too much into the cup competitions, that's definitely scuppering my league chances. What do I do?
What did you
do? So we had, well, we had the Japanese League Cup semi-final, which is over two legs against Kawasaki. Beat them 3-0 in the first leg, but then lost 4-2 in the second. And I threw away a lead in that second leg of the cup semi-final. And all of my players were quite understandably, like, quite demoralized by throwing away a league. Even though we got through an aggregate, they were unhappy. And unfortunately, that unhappiness carried through into my final, you know, most of my final games in the season. I then drew against Vitesse Kobe in my next league game. And if I'd won that game, at this stage, I think we were a point clear, maybe 2 points clear. If I'd won that, I was 5 points clear with four games to go. That's a nice position to be in. Drew with Vitesse Kobe. So we dropped points against them there. Both clubs very nervous. Really, really edgy fixture. I then lost to one of the bottom five teams in the J League, Uwara. They beat me 2-1 at home and Vitesse won. They went top. I then lost to Kobe 2-0 in the League Cup final. So that was frustrating because I actually tried in that fixture because I thought, look, at this stage, it looks like Kobe have picked up form at the end of the season. They're probably going to win the league, but if I can win the cup, I'm going to buy myself another season and we can go again. Kobe beat me in the cup final. I'm like, this is bad. We then played Kashiwa at home. which we won 2-0. So that fixture was our first league win in four. Kobe lost. Suddenly, we went above them in the table. I had two league games left. I had Kawasaki, who had done me in the cup over two legs, and I had Yokohama, who were sniffing around for third place in the league. I lost to Kawasaki. Fortunately, I think Kobe drew. So at this stage, there were, I think there were 3 points in. I was 3 points clear at the top of the table. But Kobe were in form. And I had, I think, the third place team in the league to play on the final day. Knowing that if I won, I was winning the guaranteed to win the J-League. Kobe had a significantly worse opponent to play. And if they won and I lost, they won the J-League. So it all went down to the last day. I went from feeling really positive and thinking, hey, we could do this, to I'm genuinely going to bottle this in front of the people that are watching me on stream. It was very, very, very nerve-wracking. We play Yokohama FC at home on the last day, needing a win. And we won 4-1. Everything was fine. Fabrizio Quagliarella scored the winning goal in that game at the age of nearly 41. Scores the winning goal, lifts the J-League title, and retires from football 3 days later. That was, which was good. We liked that. What a lovely end to the story. David De Gea was fantastic. Quagliarella was fantastic. Everybody, in the last game that we played, everybody was amazing. And I was very, very sad to leave. Resigned the very, very next day. Resigned from Kashima Antlers, having bought success back to Japan. Japan is conquered. Mm-hmm. And because of the nature of the save, I can move on to the new club. As it turns out, if you've never done any kind of journeyman or multiple club save on Twitch, people watching you are so invested on where you go next. There were lots and lots of ideas. I had the big five European countries loaded up as playable, just because it's nice to keep a bit of consistency in the league with them. I added a bunch of additional playable countries I added them in around January, February, but because of the way they add the new clubs in, they didn't add them in until kind of June or July. And we just sat and waited. And we thought, right, let's see what jobs come available. Let's see what comes up. I interviewed for the Schalke job because I thought, oh, that seems like fun. Bundesliga 2, Schalke, obviously previously quite a well thought of Bundesliga team, you know, a lot of Champions League stories, you know, Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, players like Raul, like a really rich kind of, you know, footballing history. Haven't been doing so well recently. They would be good fun. Interviewed for them. And they didn't even bother getting back to me to tell me I hadn't got the job. I was just sat there. I was like, right, let's just see. Let's just wait and we'll see what happens with this Schalke job. We'll just see. And I was like, that's really weird. It's been like 2 or 3 weeks since the job interview. That's really weird. Normally they've got back to me by now and then clicked on it. I just appointed a new manager 2 weeks previously. I was like, oh, cheers, lads. Thanks for letting me know. Very, very sweet of you. We added in countries like Turkey. I think we added Scotland. I think we just had a few kind of slightly lower reputation European countries we chucked into the mix just to see what would become available there. We got through to, I think, end of June when the new leagues got added. And in terms of the available jobs in the newer leagues that added, I think there was one. And it was a second-tier club in Turkey that just looked like no hopers. And there was no narrative, nothing to really drive me into going there. Mm-hmm. One club caught my eye that they had the manager job had been available for about a month. And that was Saint Etienne in France, after doing a bit of research more recently, as it turns out, until quite recently, Saint Etienne were the most successful club in French football historically. Mm. Obviously, not so much recently, but in the past, very, very, very good. Lots and lots of trophies. They were sat not really doing a huge amount in Ligue 2 in France. At the end of season one in France, I think they'd finished, it was around 13th or 14th in the league, so close to the relegation places than the playoffs. But the gap between them and the playoff teams were only around 6 or 7 points. It was very, very tight season. Mm-hmm. So they sat their manager and they were looking for a new one. So I was like, right, we'll chuck in an application for Saint Etienne. And if that doesn't come off, I'll holiday for 6 months until just before the January transfer window. And we'll see kind of what the new season looks like. But Saint Etienne offered me an interview, which is very, very exciting. I didn't promise them the world. And I was like, realistically speaking, I've had a little look at your squad. I reckon there is playoffs potential here if we get lucky. But, you know, playoffs could do it for us. And they were quite happy with that, as it turns out. So they offered me the job and I said yes. So then I arrived in France, Saint-Étienne. We had about a month, maybe 5 weeks of the preseason left. So we didn't have a full preseason with the team. We had a little look around. There are some really, really good players at Saint-Étienne. There are also some not so good players at Saint-Étienne. So it's a really, really interesting balance and mix of, you know, there's established French talent. There are some, you know, good quality younger players coming through. And there was also a lot of kind of mid players. No, nobody particularly exciting. Nobody, you know, particularly woeful. And we kind of took it from there. And as it turns out, again, they had a fairly healthy transfer budget. They had a fairly decent amount of money to spend. I think, again, it was around the £8 million mark. But again, wages were at their max. So after you balance that out, came out to around £5 million. But again, we really took advantage of the loan market, which wasn't really something I was able to do in Japan. But, you know, there's a lot of fairly decent young French players coming through at clubs that we've managed to bring in on loan. The free agent market as well was hugely helpful. I think I bought in FM21 Wonder Kid, Shola Shortire. He's come in on a free. He's not brilliant, but by Ligue 2 standards, he's absolutely phenomenal. I was quite upset to find out that the biggest heartbreaker for me in real life, John Fleck was at the club. And John Fleck was one of my favorite ever Football Manager players. And then he ended up going to Sheffield United, didn't he? In real life, he went to Sheffield United, which felt like such a betrayal. Honestly, the handful of players that, you know, John Fleck is one of them. Until Anil Ahmedhodžić as well went to, loved him in Scandinavia. And then it just hurts. It shouldn't do because it's not real. But it kind of does. So he's been dead to me for years as John Fleck. But he wanted out, so he's gone. John Fleck is now, interestingly enough, playing his football in Brazil. Because of course he is. John Fleck has gone to Brazil. He was straight out, but like Shoulder Short Tires come in. We've brought in plenty of players on loan. Alvaro Fernandez on loan for Manchester United. Really, really good young left back. Colin Dagba. Do you like Dagba? He came in from PSG for 500k. I swore that I wasn't going to go and manage in Scandinavia during this save because I did it last year. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to sign Scandinavian players. Saiver Aas from Oddsball Club, one of my favourite midfielders from last year, he's come in. I've had a really, really fun transfer window. And then for every player that we've brought in, we offloaded a couple of... right back to Leicester for like £5.5 million. We got rid of one of our kind of, you know, second tier centre backs. He went to Anderlecht for like £2.5 million. We've done quite well in, again, balancing the books financially. Of course, my objective with Saint-Étienne is to get promoted. I just want to get Saint-Étienne back into Ligue 1. After that, I'm on the fence as to what I do because it's a really, really fun team. And I am having a really, really nice time managing there. Narrative would say stay and maybe try and do something in Ligue 1. But we were saying before we press record, achieving something in Ligue 1 means PSG not winning the league. Yep. And realistically speaking, PSG are probably going to win the league because they're going to throw £150 million at players every single summer and just do it that way. But at the moment, I am having a really, really nice time there. It's going quite well. At the time of recording, I think I'm second in Ligue 2. We're about a quarter of the way through the season now, maybe a third of the way through the season. All going quite well. The team are playing really, really nice football. I've got a similar setup now to what I was doing in the network save with United. So it's kind of like a 5-2-3. So I've got kind of two wingers, one striker, two central mids, and then support from the fullbacks. That's working really, really well. There is one kind of added element, I suppose, to what's been happening at Saint-Étienne, which is also what is something that happened at Kashima Antlers. We've got through the summer transfer window, but in France, you can still sign free agents and register them kind of during the season. I've got a scout report back, and there's a few interesting names on there because I've been looking for a bit of additional support in the middle of the pitch because it's probably the one area that I don't have quite as much depth in. I'm looking for a new central midfielder, and the scout report comes through. I'm scrolling down, scrolling through. And bearing in mind we're in kind of, you know, September, so this means that it's somebody that would have just been released by the club. Mm-hmm. Donny van de Beek popped up. Manchester United legend, Donny van de Beek. Unfair, in my opinion, unfairly criticised Manchester United player Donny van de Beek, because when he was at Ajax, he was phenomenally good. When he was part of that Ajax team, world beater. Love Donny van de Beek. He's been released by United. And again, very similar to Leeds, De Gea, I go and have a chat with his agent. I'm like, hello, would Donny van de Beek like to come and play in the second tier of French football? Because I've approached so many players on loan over the summer who the clubs, the players themselves just laughed at me. Like Broha at Chelsea. Chelsea would have let me have Broha for, I think it was like $2,000 a week, like 10% of his wages. Mm-hmm. I think it was like $4,000 a week, maybe. You can have him for that. No monthly installments, nothing else. Just pay 10% of his wage. And he went, no. So Ekétié from PSG, striker. I was like, right, do you want to come? They were like, yeah, you know what? You don't even have to pay his wages. You can have him for nothing. I was like, hey, Ekétié, do you want to come play football for me? No. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, a former Saint-Étienne legend. He's transfer listed by Marseille. I was like, hey, do you want to come and play for me? No, I don't. Donny van de Beek, previously on, you know, six figures a week at Manchester United. Do you want to come and play in the second tier of French football? He's like, yeah, give me $20,000 a week. I'm in. I'm like, oh, okay. Sure. So now I've rescued Donny van de Beek from Manchester United. I think that's going to have to be a reoccurring thing that I do during the streams. And every club I go to, I'm going to have to pick somebody who was mistreated by Manchester United, bring him in from the cold, and just give him a little cuddle. And since he's only played about five games, but he just, weirdly enough, looks really, really good in the second tier of French football. Like, really, really good. But I've got to say, it's a competitive league. It's a really, really tough league, is Ligue 2. There's a lot of teams in it that could feasibly get promoted. Mm-hmm. It's going to be good fun. I'm not going to hedge my bets and say I'm going to guarantee it season one. But I feel like with Saint-Étienne, I've built something. Whereas Kashima Antlers, it was just get a job done there. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you're there for a good time, not a long time. Saint-Étienne feels like there's potential to carry on. And that's what I'm kind of on the fence with at the moment. If I get them up this season or next season, I might give it another year or two in Ligue 1 just mm-hmm. to see what we can do. But as I say, that's a big hypothetical for what might or might not happen later on in the save, I suppose. But I am really enjoying it. It's been, I'm quite lucky because I think, like we were talking about earlier, Kev, it's just connecting to clubs early doors. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've been very, very lucky with Saint-Étienne and with Kashima in that it clicked early and it made me feel, you know, and I'm again fortunate that both clubs are stable enough when it financially mm. and in terms of reputation, even though comparatively in both of their leagues, they've underachieved in the last few years. There's still enough goodwill there and there's still the finances are still in a sensible enough position that it gives me the opportunity to meet my targets at each club. Because if I couldn't, it would go against, I suppose, the point of the save.
Sure.
But it's been really, really good fun so far. And as we've said previously before, I'm just really enjoying playing FM24. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest part of it. I'm just having a really, really nice time there. So that's been good. So I'm looking forward to doing more of it. I'm hoping to finish season two by the end of the Christmas holidays. That's mm-hmm. the objective. Because of course I work in a school, so I've got a couple of weeks off coming up, which I'm very excited about. So I think there may be some streaming going on during that time. Awesome. So we'll see. But so far, touch wood, so good.
Nice.
Isn't it though? Isn't it nice? It is nice. It is. I'm just enjoying content. I'm enjoying playing FM at the moment, and I'm enjoying playing it with people. We talked about the FM community, the wider community with Nick last mm-hmm. week. You know, everybody is invested in everybody else's saves. It feels like that way to me as well. You know, it's every when I'm streaming at the moment, I'm seeing a lot of familiar faces in terms of people who stream, and you know, they're interested in what's going on, and vice versa. You know, I'm invested in Rolling in the Isles. I'm invested in going home. That's Jeb Save, by the way. I'm already at home. This is where I live. this is just my house. You know, I think, you know, Callum's Bill Slough save, I want to see him smash it there. Like, there's plenty of people, like, you know, Salty's Wonder Kid United. I am furious that I'm not getting minutes there, but
you've got to be in chat there. I've been in chat a lot, and I'm getting a lot of minutes. You've got to be in chat, boys. Come on, come and join the fun. I've really enjoyed Salty B's stuff. It's been great.
Mm-hmm. But no, everyone's doing bits. Favoritism. And there's also a bit of that, isn't it? You know, imagine, Jeb, somebody liking us more than Kev, though. It's just never going to happen. It's just even my kids. They much prefer Kev to me. Much prefer him. Probably because he's made promises about the tooth fairies and 20 quids all over the place, isn't it? But
lovely stuff.
Isn't it though? Isn't it? Honestly, I'm at the point now where, so just for context, if you've not watched one of our network stream saves, it's quite frequently my children will come in and say goodnight as we stream. We affectionately call them the board of directors in this household. And Kev might have made promises about amounts of money the tooth fairy may leave under pillows to my children. Yesterday, my son told me he's got another wobbly tooth, and I am never going to financially recover from this. Never.
They're basically going to each other, shall we knock another one out?
Yeah. This is it.
Found so the hammer in your office. That's what it is.
I hid it. That's the thing. I hid the hammer. They knew. Like, that's on it. My wife, we were watching a film on Netflix the other night. It's that, I think it's called Leave the World Behind. It's the new kind of, you know, post-apocalyptic-y, Sandra Bullock-y one. And there's a scene where somebody, one of the characters, I won't give context, quite a good film, loses some teeth. And he just like pops about like 5 or 6 teeth out. And he's holding them in his hand. And I'm just sat there like, oh, that's horrible. Then my wife just nudged me. Well, that's about 100 quid from the tooth fairy for that. So he's in a heap of trouble. See, it's
you're
catching,
welcome,
Kev. Yeah, thank you, mate. Thanks, Kev.
I think really it was under the bad influence of Jebaroo, probably, but I'll take it.
Jeb, Auntie and Jeb would never.
Yeah, exactly. Uncle Jeb.
Uncle Jeb would never. There we go. What a lovely concept. I want Uncle Jeb round mine for Christmas. I'd have it. That's the perfect Christmas guest, in my opinion. More than welcome. I'm not going to tell you where I live. You've got to figure it out, but you know, you can find it. It's easily done. Just listen for crying, mainly me, over the Christmas period, because I'm very tired. Lads, before it goes completely off the rails, before it goes completely off the rails, I think that very much to me feels like a podcast.
It does. Absolutely. It was a lovely thing to be back doing a podcast. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yep. Good. It's great to hear how bad me and Kev are at Football Manager.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
I know.
It's therapy, Jeb. It's therapy. Yeah, yeah. We're here for therapy. It's
hence
fine.
The name.
It's all fine.
I genuinely feel bad. Like, I feel bad about doing well. I feel like...
So
you've been listening to Rich Owens gloating.
Yeah.
It's the new podcast.
The new podcast from the people that bought you FMT. Rich, like, it's been a long time coming, all right? I think gloating's a strong word. Just let me have it. Give it another 2 months. Everything will have gone wrong.
Yeah, say tomorrow night for the network save.
Right? Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, oh yeah, all that European football I'm not playing. That's nice. There we go. Back down to earth. It's important to keep me humble. Lads, it's been an absolute pleasure. Kev, it's been lovely to have you back. We missed you terribly. And Jeb, it's just lovely to spend the afternoon in your company again. It just is. Before we go, we've spent a long time today talking about what it is that we're doing. And if you've listened to what we're doing and thinking, oh my God, that sounds amazing, I want to get involved with that, you can, generally speaking, watch us do it on Twitch. Jeb, where can the people find you making content?
You find me twitch.tv/Jebaroo. I'm actually, I might stream this week. I'm actually at home. I've had a catastrophic PC failure this week, so I've got some bits to sort out. But yeah, hopefully there. I'll do a little community shout as well. Somebody that we've raided, I think, last network save, or it might just be somebody I've raided. I think it was, no, it's the guy I raided after my 6-hour stream. Bucky Lucre. So it's Bucky, B-U-C-K-Y, L-U-C-R-E. He's just got a phenomenal streaming setup for somebody with very new to streaming by the looks of things. So yeah, give him a follow, give him a like and stuff like that. He's doing a Welling United save at the moment. But yeah, really nice streaming setup, really chilled out. He's like a late evening Kev. So like, nice and chilled. Nice to put in the background. I will shout out him.
Yeah, he was great. And the thing I really like about him as well, his Twitch name is named after Bucky Lazek from Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. So there is like the greatest crossover I've ever seen. I love it. Yeah, beautiful setup. Really, really lovely dude as well. So yeah, go spend some time with him. Speaking of lovely dudes you want to spend time with, Kev.
Yes.
Where can the people find you making the content this week?
Keep everything crossed, everybody, that you can find me at the United City FM on Twitch every weekday afternoon, 3 till 5 p.m. It's going to be most weekday afternoons for the next couple of weeks through the Christmas period. I'm doing Monday through Thursday this coming week. And then I'm back on, I think, on the Wednesday after Christmas for the rest of that week as well. So it shouldn't be too much that I miss over the next couple of weeks, hopefully through Christmas. But that's where you can find me, at the United City FM. I'll give a shout out as well. Firstly, boys, if you want game time, you have to be in Salty B's chat. Come on, come and join us. It's been a lot of fun watching his Wonder Kids side happen with all of the content creators and viewers in the team itself. But you got to be there to get in the team. So come and join us. I'm sure we could use you. The one that I really want to give a shout out today is I've just been recently able to pop into Pokes' stream, Pokes FM, a little bit in the last week or so. And, you know, we are big fans of Pokes on this particular podcast in terms of his exploits in the FM playoffs and other bits and pieces. He's just a really lovely guy and a really great streamer. If you just want a nice place to be for a couple of hours whenever he's streaming, drop in on Pokes and say that we sent you there, because he's great and he's a lovely guy. And I've really enjoyed his content recently. So go check him out.
Absolutely. Second that, Pokes is wonderful. If you've not experienced a Poke stream, go and watch a Poke's stream. Do it. Tell him FMT sent you, and he'll be really confused. You know me, twitch.tv/RichardOwens.fm. That's where you can find me. Thank you, Colton. Cheers, Colton. twitch.tv/RichardOwens.fm. That's me. In terms of streaming this week, who knows? I think the plan is we're going to meet tomorrow night. If you're listening to this on Patreon, we're meeting on Monday night for the return of the FMT network save, which will be lovely. In terms of what's the story, former glory this week might be a little bit sparse, actually, just due to work commitments, other commitments. So I work in a school, so this is the final week before we break up for Christmas. So lots to do. But then over the Christmas break, I'm going to try and get some evenings in for sure. So we'll try and get the save progressed as much as physically possible. I'd like to make a little shout out this week as well. I would like to shout out somebody who, again, in terms of the wider FM community, I know we've talked about him before on the podcast, but in terms of the wider FM community, I think this person spends more time like celebrating and promoting and shouting out other people's content than he ever does his own. And his own content is wonderful. So please spend a few hours this week, if you have the capacity to, with our friend the Steak Bake. Steaky is lovely.
Lovely. And he's just there, actually.
He is. He's just there with Callum. He's just there holding up his scarf. You can see him in the background if you're watching on YouTube. Not out your window. That's just, he's probably not there. But yeah, Steaky is wonderful. For the audio listeners, Jeb just waved out the window. He spends more time celebrating other people's content than he does shouting out his own. And the stuff that he does, his streams, are an absolute treat to be a part of, whether it's FM. He loves his Pokemon as well. So just go and spend a bit of time with Steak this week. I'm sure he would appreciate it.
Yeah, Rich, can we give a congrats out as well? Because I think this is always a little bit dangerous in case we miss anybody out. But I've recently seen that both Ticker and Steve Hood have been have got their partnership on Twitch, which is an incredible thing. I mean, I've been doing Twitch now for a couple of years, and I'm nowhere near getting those partnership numbers on a regular basis to be able to get to that. So anybody that achieves it in any way deserves all the plaudits for that. So congratulations to those two. If there's anybody that we've forgotten that has also recently got that as well, then apologies for that. But those are the two that I spotted. But yeah, big deal, very, very good, and they're absolutely crushing it to get to that level. So well done to those two.
Yeah. Well done, lads. Well done. As Kev says, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. And it's just nice to see people succeed, generally speaking. So yeah, they've both done phenomenally to get to that level. So well done, lads. Well done. Enjoy being partners. It's thoroughly deserved on both counts. I reckon that's what we call it a day, fellas. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you both. Thank you, Kev.
Thank you,
Jeb, for spending the morning with me. And thank you for listening, watching, however you are consuming this podcast. We continue to grow week in, week out, which is lovely. And that is entirely down to you, our audience. So thank you for spending the time. Talk to a friend. Recommend this to a friend. Then they recommend it to a friend. Then they recommend it to a friend. They may only have four friends, but that's four people.
Keep going, Jeb. You can do this.
Oh,
he can do this. He's got this. Anyway, while I'm here, I just wanted to talk about the... No, I didn't. I wanted to talk about nothing. That wraps it up for another episode of Football Manager Therapy. Thank you so very much for joining us. And we will see you on the next one. Take care. Love you lots. Bye-bye.
Bye.